Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the QS Cast. This is Tarkan. I know for many of you it's been quite a while. I'm thrilled to be back. It feels good. It's just going to be me today chatting with Mr. Damon Morris, co-owner of Card Kingdom. We do this, gosh, about once a year. We've been doing it for 3 years now, I think. This may mark our fourth time chatting, Damon.
It might be. Yeah, it's at least three. Always fun to talk through, get your perspective on what's going on, and hopefully between the two of us, we can kind of fill out some information of what's going on.
Yeah, it's cool because obviously Card Kingdom, you guys are massive now, and I feel like the first year we spoke, you guys were still sort of getting into kind of ramping up, and Card Kingdom was really becoming sort of a ubiquitous, name in the industry. And to go from there to now, it's really cool and it's super interesting. And I really appreciate you coming back every year. We love that. We love having you on. So thank you very much.
Well, it's really fun to be here. And yeah, we've been doing it for, I guess, 20 years now. It's been a long time, but yeah, we had this, I think we always had a really good market and a really good place in the industry, but not everybody knew who we were. And then we did more marketing starting back, right after we started talking. And I think people know more about us now.
Yeah, well, they definitely do. I would say probably anybody that's involved with Magic knows who Card Kingdom is now. So, well, let's kind of get into it. And I think, the first thing we should probably just dive into before we go into kind of Card Kingdom and where you guys are at now, obviously Magic has been crazy for the past 18 months. And when we spoke last year, we were just coming out of the reserve list hype and boom.
right.
Which, if everyone doesn't know, Card Kingdom was, you guys were in the thick of it. I remember going to your site when all that was going on, and it was like a near mint or EX copy would be posted. And within, I'm not kidding, within like 30 to 60 seconds, it was gone.
Yeah, we were just trying to ride that. And, you've heard us talk about our philosophy a number of times, but it's never, how do we avoid this market, or how do we step back and wait for it to settle down? We believe in trying to price things at what we think the fair price is and continuing to move those cards. So it was wild, and it was interesting. It was fun, and it was somewhat surprising. There was a lot of unexpected swings, I guess. And yeah, I guess things have moved on from there, and we're in a whole different world now.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I guess, why don't we review, let's kind of like start with where that was and kind of transition to where we are now. So obviously we love having you on because we get to see the big picture of the marketplace from where you sit. The people in our position are either, kind of bootstrapping, or they're kind of mid-level vendors. But from your position, you get to see a really interesting bird's eye view. So what's going on with the vintage market from where it was? Because it's certainly, from our perspective, it seems like it's definitely cooled down to the point where a lot of the prices have kind of retraced back. So I'm curious, from where you sit, Are you seeing us go back? Like, are the prices going to really drop, or did we kind of pass that point of no return? And more than likely, we're going to see like another bump in the future. Kind of where are we at with the vintage market now?
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it bump again in the future, but we're definitely have cooled over the last 4 to 6 months. I think a lot of people have, to our earlier point, a lot of people have stepped out of that market. You will see a lot of the other big vendors not stocking as much of it or selling some of that stuff off. And we're just continuing to treat it like we do any other card. If there's demand for that, we stock it. And there is still demand, and people are still buying that. But it's not at this feverish pitch like it was. And I would expect a rebound after that. But I don't see it, dropping through the floor. But I have seen it soften. I wouldn't be surprised to see it come down a bit more, but I don't see a cliff on it, if that makes any sense. Okay. There's still this, like has always been with Magic the Gathering, there's this extreme price sensitivity, and the market is very fluid. And if you're dropping your price on a card from $100 to $180, or from $200 to $180, and somebody else is paying, you know, $160 and has a store credit on it, you'll see the market adjust and pick that stuff and move it around. And so we've seen a bit of that happening. So I have seen this softening, but I don't see it continuing forever. There's not a sharp drop, but there has been a gentle drop.
So this kind of leads us to a sort of a deeper question about the market in general and the industry. So that boom obviously was renewed interest for a variety of reasons. You know, people cite, well, a lot of cryptocurrency money was put into Magic, but regardless of that, there was obviously heightened interest in the game and in the industry. Do you think that that was a lightning in the bottle? I know you're saying prices aren't going to go back to where they were and they'll keep going, but do you think that was a point where we saw Magic really blow up again in terms of popularity and awareness and people engaging with the game, like player base growth, et cetera? Was there kind of a correlation there?
I don't know. The vintage market kind of ebbs and flows depending on who's running, you know, the big tournament scene or what stores are participating in those events. It's very hard to be a vintage player if you don't have a place to play vintage. And then once you lose that, you're just based on the collectability of the cards. And quite often, you know, a lot of that old alpha beta stuff are not, you know, tournament staples, but they still command a pretty high price, right? Just because of the rarity and the collectability. But I think it's this bubble, right? Where it's a water balloon where if you have, you know, at first it was the ABU stuff went crazy, right? And it went up and everybody's like, oh, this is starting to feel scary. And then everybody pivoted to the Arabian Nights and Legends and Antiquities cards. And then they took off, and then it went to the reserve list and they took off. So we kind of had this cascading waterfall of interest. And then you have to remember, in this last year, we had Modern Horizons, which that was a total pivot from the vintage market, where all of a sudden this somewhat stable format became crazy again with, hey, introduction of new cards, a big bunch of cards at one time, and that downstream effect of everybody starting new decks and all of that. So, and that was a big change in the modern market, which I'm sure we'll want to jump into that as well. But sometimes when you see softening of a format, it's just because there's interest in another format. And the players are there, and I don't see any softening of players or collectors. They're just moving around to what they think the best opportunity is.
Interesting. Okay, so there's not necessarily a correlation between growth in Magic and what we saw in 2017, 2018 with the reserve list.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's, you know, Polar Kraken, right? Like, do you expect people to be buying that card because of its playability? And I'd say probably not. Or an Alpha Fungusaur, right? There's these cards that are very expensive, but you can play with a different version of that card. And so I really think a lot of that push was driven by the collectability. And then that market was spiking. And anytime you have a market where people feel they can get, you know, 20, 50, 100% returns over the course of a year or two, people are going to be interested. Really hard to do that with the stock market. Magic is kind of this, you know, interesting marketplace where that stuff does exist.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to stay on this topic too much, but this sort of kind of sets the tone for some of the other things we're going to talk about. I guess. So bubble is a really nasty word that people hate, and it carries a lot of negative connotations. But so if there wasn't necessarily a correlation to player growth, do you think that was simply a moment when that market just kind of, it was kind of a confluence of a variety of factors that came together and just happened to work? And you kind of think there could be events like that that continue to happen in the future, but it doesn't necessarily have to do with the overall Magic market or the industry itself, right?
I see it as, I mean, I'm sure there's a combination and it's going to be a little bit of everything, but really that spike and that escalation over the vintage products, I believe were primarily driven by more collectability and speculation. And Magic continues to grow. It becomes more popular, but they're not printing alpha cards and they're not printing sealed legends booster boxes anymore. And you can look at those and they continue to go. And you don't have to go back that far. You can start looking at, you know, once a Magic box gets to be 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, it does go up just because there aren't that many left. And you will see them go from, hey, you know, the $100 box that gets down to the $80 box that starts at go up to 100, 120. And then all of a sudden you'll have this, hey, these boxes that we used to not think much about are $600 boxes. And as a resource, something that you're using up, and even the singles fall into that to some extent, you know, you're not, as your pool of players or collectors increases, that older stuff, just, there just isn't that much of it. So you're going to see, I believe you're going to, as long as the game stays popular and the players are there, you're going to see this escalation over time.
And do you guys have a particular strategy when it comes to how you approach that stuff? Because obviously it's very unique as opposed to like contemporary releases and cheaper cards, right?
Yeah. We pay less attention over the wild swings to that stuff. I believe even though you see these crazy spikes, that the actual change in that market is more gradual overall. And, you know, something like Standard or Modern, especially on an individual card basis, can be, you know, it's a wild ride as decks come and go and things get popular and phase out. And sure, that can happen with the vintage tournament scene as well, where a new card will, you know, make a new deck viable, which we've seen recently. But yeah, we are less aggressive on price changes for the old vintage items, because if you are very aggressive with that, they don't sell through as fast. Like if you're selling a standard staple at 100 a week, you know, you're never going to have an alpha rare sell at 100 a week. It's just, you know, there's 1100 in existence, so they're not going to go that fast. You're going to sell, you know, one a month or one every 3 months or one every 6 months. And therefore, if you're being very reactive on the price, you're artificially forcing that card to come in or go. So you have to be a little more patient with them. So I'd say that's our philosophical difference on the old cards.
Okay. So moving from that era, you know, 2017, 2018, we then moved into this arena and like, you know, these new premium products, and we're sort of in a new time, right? So we kind of came out of that, and now I'm very curious to hear as far as your perspective on where we're at now. So transitioning from this reserve list hype into this sort of arena and, you know, 50 different premium products and Modern Horizons. So what are things looking like, at least from the CK perspective now?
So jumping into arena, of course you have, you know, a lot of fear, you know, Paper Magic's going to go away because Arena is so great. But really, you have Arena is the newest format. I don't know how much of a hit it's had on Standard. That's a very hard thing for us to quantify. But so far, we haven't seen, you know, a dramatic effect. War of the Spark was one of our best releases ever. It was actually super fantastic right about the time, you know, and that was at the time when Arena was very popular. And we've always looked at it, we've always hoped that it's a great acquisition tool to get people into the game and that people will play Arena and play Paper or use Arena to get into Paper. And I'm sure it happens also with people who play Paper, get into Arena if it works for their lives better. So I think it's a good, you know, evening of the market to keep people playing Magic, which I believe is good for everybody. But we haven't seen a super dramatic effect from Arena. I know WotC is advertising it heavily and are fully committed to it, but they also are fully committed to, you know, new formats or Modern going into Pioneer, and that is all on the old, you know, the Magic Online platform. So there is this whole spread of things, and Arena, with how fast it is and how well it works and all the, you know, programming, the animations, I don't know if they could make that work if you had, say, a vintage event on there. Like, that sounds like a programming anomaly, a programming problem that would be difficult to solve. So overall, I feel Arena's been, I'm hoping, good for all of us. They've needed a good acquisition tool forever, and I think that this is a good thing. And the from what I've heard, the experience of people watching events, they like it more than they've liked watching other forms of that. So I think that's good for getting the word out and getting new people into the game. Did you want to more? Actually, do you have any more questions on Arena before I start going on to all the other new formats?
No. You kind of mentioned, you touched on it, that you guys don't really have, there's not really a sophisticated way to quantify the effect. I guess, you know, it would be interesting to see if there were moments of a delta when, okay, arena started and, oh wait, we noticed there was this dip here, or, you know, if there were any data points that indicated any kinds of shifts, you know, I know that would be tough to do, but I guess from what I'm hearing, you guys either didn't really have a way to really see that or didn't really notice anything that was meaningful.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to talk about the whole shift in standard, cause it's useful to put Arena in the perspective of standard. We did see Throne was softer than we expected it to be. We had really high hopes for the set. We thought it'd be great, but putting that on Arena is very difficult. There's been basically a major release almost every month for, you know, quite a while, and it's very hard to quantify it. Well, is that just the increased release of products? Is that a somewhat stale standard format, or is that an effective Arena? And based on the War of the Spark release, I don't feel like it's an effective Arena, unless Arena has started to grab more of that share. But, you know, a stale, if you have one or two decks that are dominating standard, it's always bad for standard sales. And we had that with Golos going into the Throne release, and then now with Oko continuing on. So I'd say that dip also is somewhat difficult for us to quantify, because if we look at it, we aren't selling as much as we were, let's say, 3-4 months ago. But at the same time, we're selling more now than we were 8 months or a year ago. So the curve still looks okay. It's just that Modern Horizons and War were fantastic. They were two of the best sets we've ever had. And then, you know, you kind of expect, hey, those last two were fantastic. We think Throne is going to be the best set ever. And it wasn't. It was, you know, more like standard sets from before those two.
Well, I think, you know, from where we were sitting in a lot of the QS chats, and this is, I know that this was echoed on in many places, but Throne specifically felt a little bit lower on the power scale. And now you have the Oko thing. I think there were a couple of things. It's really weird, because when I saw the set, I thought the fantasy theme was just awesome, and I still think it's awesome. I think it's the flavor of the set is just a home run. It kind of feels kind of like Innistrad when they did the horror thing, and now they've got the fantasy theme. But I guess, you know, I don't know if, because the limited format is really fun too. I've actually played one or two games of the set in limited and draft, and I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's, do you think that it could be a combination of like, oh, the overall power level of the set in relation to standard was just not great, and then so many products that were, you know, around that time and related to Throne.
Yo, that's a whole other thing. Just the collector's boosters, and, you know, we didn't know quite what to do, right? We're cracking boxes, and we don't know what the different variants, I guess we know what they're going to be because they've been spoiled, but we don't know what the distribution of them are. You know, we have no idea, especially when you get to, hey, it's a borderless foil. We don't know if we're going to get one of those or 100 of those. So pre-sale had to be very pared down. And then, you know, you're selling that stuff after, you can start buying it through secondary market. And yeah, it was a tough set to understand. And I don't know if that affected like the sales of just the regular cards. Like maybe a lot of people like, well, I want to wait to be able to get one of the promos instead. So all in all, it is a very difficult set to figure out what's going on. But I totally agree with you that the trailer commercial that came out, I absolutely loved, and the flavor I loved. And I only drafted it once, but I had a really great draft, and there's a bunch of different fun decks going on. So there seems to be nothing wrong with the set other than it didn't really change standard a whole lot. And the changes that have happened are, you know, you're not selling a bunch of different cards from the set. You're selling a handful of cards from the set. But yeah, we'll see. And, you know, who knows? There's chance that there's bannings looming and everything will shake up and start going again.
How do you feel about this, that kind of onslaught of product releases? And I know, you know, several times in the past when you've come on, we've kind of dipped into this topic of like, are there too many releases? And it seems like we're getting back into that territory again where it's like, oh my gosh, I mean, they made that Commander product announcement where there's like 9 Commander supplementals.
And yeah, then it's a lot of Commander.
They've got all these premium products and then the traditional releases. And it's, you know, where do you sit on that?
I believe that there's a bit more than I would like. I think they've scaled up and they've hit. But also, all releases aren't created equal, right? So I think Modern Horizons was a brilliant product, and I think it was great and well-received and good. I think the Commander products do hit a different audience. I think there's less crossover between, say, you know, Vintage and Modern players than there is between Commander and Modern players. But there is still crossover. So you are going to have people who hit saturation, and they're just like, just too much to keep up with. I'm not going to buy everything, right? So you're not going to have this... Every set isn't going to have the same power or the same purchasability, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
I guess my question is, from your perspective, what is the motivation? I mean, obviously we can say, well, there's a business motive. There's just a bottom line motivation, but is that really all it is? Or do you think there's like, is there some other philosophy or something that's, you know, what we would talk about, you know, in the group here is that due to video game culture and arena and sort of this like modern gaming culture we live in, we wonder if they're doing this because they want people just engaging with Magic 24/7 and have a million things to buy and they're always wanting to create hype. Do you think that's part of this too?
I don't know. I don't look at it that way. That could be. The way I've perceived it is they're trying to tailor their products to meet particular customers in a better way. So rather than having one set that you will get cards for Modern, cards for Commander, and cards for Standard from, it seems they're specializing their products to be, this is very much a Standard release, this is very much a Commander release, this is very much a Modern release. So the players who enjoy those can go deeper and enjoy them more. At least that's what I've seen from it. And it solves some of the problems of, hey, if we want to introduce new cards for Commander, you know, things that affect every player, things like that, putting those in a Standard set is kind of a feel bad for the Standard player who opens their pack and draft is like, well, I can't do anything with this card. And now that they're putting out more Commander products in the future, that feeds that need more directly. And I feel the same thing about Modern. When you had a card that was meant to, you could kind of see the cards like, this is a good card for Modern that's coming out in the Standard set. Quite often the power balance was way off and that card was kind of screwing up the Standard format. So there was no way to really get cards into Modern other than through Standard. So that's, for example, Modern Horizon is just a way to, hey, let's keep Modern more exciting, more fresh. Let's turn over some of the decks. That's a way to do it that doesn't disrupt Standard. So that's the way I've looked at it. And I think where you have the danger of the oversaturation or the too many products or the, you know, getting hit 24/7 is if you have the players that want to play all the formats and are interested in all the formats. I could see that being, you know, a lot to keep up with, not only financially, but mentally.
I feel like maybe it was 2 conversations ago, we were sitting in a similar place. And I think you actually even had a similar perspective. You're like, I think it's a little bit more than I would like. And then I think we noticed, maybe it was 2000 and maybe it was last year, 2017, they sort of shifted and it felt like they scaled back a little bit. And now it looks like they're ramping it up again.
Yeah. I feel like this has been the biggest ramp up ever. And I think they'll look at the data and they'll see what the sales are. And, you know, they know better than I do how many booster boxes are selling. Of course, I have I can look at our sales and try to extrapolate, but that doesn't do a great job of it. But, you know, WotC knows exactly what that effect is. So if it is dropping off a bit and they are saturating the market, they can react, you know, pretty quickly. The number of releases I think they have planned out. Obviously, Commander, they have planned out for all of next year already. But the production volumes they can play with or how they're going to treat this in the future, they have a lot of control over, obviously. So, I mean, they're smart over there, and they're getting smarter, and they're testing. Their perspective has obviously changed from, you know, where we were for a decade, where it was like, hey, there's either three or four main sets a year, and then we'll throw three or four supplemental products out and see how those go. And that's kind of where we were. And we're definitely seeing them play around a little, which I think is good. And granted, when I was on last and I was like, it seems like kind of a lot of products, boy, it sure didn't seem to fill the demand. And I think they might've just finally found that line, you know, with Throne. And if I got exactly what I'd like, I'd say they'd slow down a little bit and ease into this. The release every month and then going into like collector's boosters along with all the other products at the same time for release. I think it was a lot for people to keep up with. And then you look at like all the variations and how many versions of a card. And if you're a completist, if you're that person who's like, I just want four of every card that's ever made, and those people exist, you know, you just got a lot of cards dumped on you that are very expensive.
Makes it kind of fun to hunt the stuff, though.
sure.
And speaking of which, I want to quickly touch on, you mentioned Modern Horizons, and then I also want to touch on the mystery boosters and get your thoughts on that. But let's start with Modern Horizons. So I said this when Modern Horizons was announced and or releasing. I predicted it was going to be, it's called Modern Horizons, but the cards in it tend to skew Commander. Or they said they tend to be also very good in Commander. So I suspected it was going to be great for Commander players. And I also thought that it would be, it's an excellent pickup, because eventually when the product is out of print, 99% of these cards are all first run cards. So you should be collecting up the singles of these now, because next year they're going to cut, the pipe's going to go run dry, and they're going to stop producing it. So I said it's time to go in and start, if you're going to get a position in Modern Horizons, well, first of all, if you're going to get a position in anything to speculate, I thought Modern Horizons was the best place to be, particularly around now when the prices had bottomed out. What do you think about Modern Horizons? I know you said it was one of your best sellers, and as far as, you know, the uniqueness of the product, do you recommend people, is that a great place to kind of like, if you're going to speculate or if you're going to start, you know, moving into something, into Magic for, you know, kind of wanting to see a return, what do you think about Modern Horizons?
I think it's going to be really good long term, as long as you have the patience for it. I wouldn't want to jump on it and try to turn it in, you know, months. I think you want to hold a little longer than that, but long term I think it's going to be fantastic. But yeah, to your point, there's a lot of new cards. There's a lot of cards that are, you know, across formats, a lot of cards that are unique and different. And I see it being a good set for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it just feels like, as I think next April or around next April will be when they stop, you know, when the allocation or when, you know, when they no longer print it. And it feels like once that set is out of print, I don't think it's going to be an overnight transition, but I have a sense that there's going to be, you know, a percentage of, I guess whales, we'll call them, that are going to just buy up a lot of the boxes. I just have this sense, because I think that product is so unique and there's so many first run cards in it that I think the box value, we could see an increase in that sooner than later once it's out of print.
Yeah, it could go fast. Like if you go back to the like original Modern Masters sets, which I think had a much smaller printing, but I mean, boy, did those skyrocket quickly when that dried up. And it did.
Okay, so mystery boosters. How do you feel about these things?
You know, I haven't spent a lot of time. I saw a lot of, you know, chat about it yesterday. You know, just people talking about what cards they saw. And I still remember the first one I saw, I was like, oh, it's just a bunch of old cards and booster packs. And there was, you know, nothing worth any money that had come out. And then all of a sudden started seeing some very interesting cards. I have no idea what to even think about it yet. I haven't talked to anybody. I just read one of my chat channels in, you know, at Card Kingdom of people talking about it. And I'm interested. At first, I heard that they were, what was it that I heard? That when I first saw the test cards, it was pretty interesting. And then I saw somebody say that those wouldn't be in a release product, which I was a little disappointed in. But so far, I don't know if those are rumors or if that's been stated, you know, by WotC.
Yeah.
The whole thing's interesting. I don't have my head around it. It is similar to some products that we've done in the past with, making draftable sets of, you know, old out of print cards and putting them together. And that did really well for us. Like, we feel our customers really enjoyed it, and it was a good way for us to move a bunch of cards that we had collected too many of them, and customers really enjoyed it and just found it's a kind of like a chaos draft where you're getting a bunch of different stuff. And it looks like the value of the cards will actually be fairly good too. Just, I don't know what the distribution looks like. I haven't seen anything on distribution of what's worthwhile and what's not worthwhile in the sets. So I don't have my head around what exactly is in that yet. I've heard there was a spoiler posted on the Wizards page, but I haven't even looked through that yet. So I'm not quite up to speed. How do you feel about it? What have you heard?
So what I think is I made this point. I feel like it's like a meta thing. It's like a game within a game, because now you have people that are trying to puzzle together of the list of what was, you know, like this set list. And I actually think that's kind of brilliant, because now you have this whole thing where people are hunting around, trying to piece together what's printed, what's not. They're trying to round up a list. They're trying to figure things out. I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, nobody has any clue. Like, there's been no pattern, to my knowledge. There's been no patterns that have been set. Yeah, like, nobody has any idea. We, like you said, we've seen a couple of things. Like, we saw Mana Crypt and Bloom Tender. There were a few, like, good cards, but we don't know how many copies exist. We don't know any of these things. So I actually think it's kind of interesting, because I feel like there are going to be people that are going to try and math it and puzzle it out. And it feels so meta to me. It's like they've created this game within a game scenario where you now have to kind of figure out what's going on with mystery packs. I think that's kind of cool.
Sure. Yeah. And they did a great job of actually keeping it under wraps until somebody opened a pack, which I think is fantastic. I think that's become more and more difficult as, you know, product needs to be made and distributed and all the interests and all the people trying to be the first one to see it. Like, but, you know, good on them to actually get something completely under wraps until somebody opened a pack. It would have fallen very flat if they were not able to do that, and they were actually able to do that, which is great.
And how are you all handling the singles, as far as, like, are you going to be actively acquiring them? I mean, I'm assuming at some point some of them they'll have a buy price on them, but do you guys have a way you're approaching that, or are you kind of holding off for a while?
I'm not sure on that. I'm sure we'll probably just get them on the site and try to start buying them as soon as we can. Let me do a quick little search and see if I can find out if we've created a category for it and give you a little insider information. Let's see here. Well, I don't see an addition for mystery yet, but I'm sure once we get a list together and feel confident, we'll put something up and we'll start buying and selling them. Then again, I don't know how many are going to be out.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Say that again.
Well, there's going to be a very limited quantity out for a while, so I don't know if we would really be able to get going on that or not. So unfortunately, I can't really answer your question super well.
Well, there you guys, everyone who's listening, now you know, it's possible that Card Kingdom is not going to be buying these for a while. So who knows what's going to happen as far as their availability. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But they did mark the, people are commenting that they marked the frame in somewhat of a noticeable way so that which is actually kind of a nightmare, because now you're going to have to separate Mystery Siege Rhino from Con Siege Rhino, you know?
Yeah, you have to notice the little P, was it on there, or whatever the letter code. It will be tough. And I actually, have you heard this? If the number, the collector's number, is the same as the original printing, not the mystery pack number, is that correct?
I don't know. No, I don't, because I feel like that's the thing that people would be trying to solve. Like if there was a number, then people would know, okay, this is X number out of 1,000 or whatever.
Exactly. And I believe that they put the original numbers on there. So you have to actually to identify the addition. You can't even look at the number. See if I have something on that. I believe that was being discussed yesterday. Yep. There's a Bloom Tender. Mana Crypt. It looks like there's an image of a Tybalt. But that was the hand-drawn one. All right. There's a tiny PW symbol in the bottom left corner that makes them distinct.
I think that's it.
But then I have one message here. It looks like the original set numbers, as far as I could tell from the video. So that's what we... that's what we saw, was original collector number, to keep it even more mysterious.
Oh, gosh. I'm sure that's going to be lovely dealing with from your guys' end, from an inventory standpoint.
We'll get good at it eventually.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully there's not too many of them, you know, so it's not too much of a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that was... an interesting play. I also think they did that to sort of drive more attendance to events. I don't know if you have any perspective on events, or I think you guys were at Command Fest, right?
Yeah, I walked over there and it sold out. And I think the one in Chicago as well sold out. So it's that seemed to do really well. And I was actually talking to a couple people at Channel Fireball, and they were like, well, we'll see. And they were very happy that it sold out and felt really good about it, because it wasn't a, you know, a high dollar event where, you know, if I do really well, I'm going to make a ton of money. So seeing that was very encouraging, that people really valued it and valued getting together to play Commander. So pretty encouraging from that perspective of people playing Magic live.
So it's interesting because Card Kingdom typically does not do Magic Fest GPs. But you did show up for a Command Fest. So was there a particular motivation for that, or a reason behind that, or is that anything that you're going to get more into more events?
Not necessarily, but it was in Seattle and it was Commander themed, which are two things that, you know, made a lot of sense for us. So that's the reason we did that one. That doesn't mean we're going to start doing all the GPs. We definitely have interest in that. It's just I don't know, if you know what we've been doing, and we're working on a store in Portland currently and hoping to open that, you know, in the first quarter of next year. And we'd like to keep opening stores, and we feel it's actually kind of hard to run a large scale event program as well as opening new stores. And we've made the conscious effort that we believe we serve our community better by opening stores and being there for them every day rather than coming to your city, you know, once or twice a year for an event. So it's a slower way to get there, but I believe we find it more satisfying as a company.
Okay. Go in line with events. This is sort of tangentially related, but I definitely want to get your perspective on it. I don't know if you heard, but Star City has announced that they are removing Legacy from their open tournaments, their SCG Opens. And that moving forward, Legacy will only be featured in some of their select SCG Con, the big event they do like once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the community, if not most of the community, took that as, well, that's like yet one more nail in the coffin for Legacy. I'm curious what your thoughts are. Well, first of all, if you knew about that, and if you didn't, what you think as far as the future of Legacy. And if those cards, if you think that's going to create sort of a shakeup in the value of those cards, or you know, what you think about that moving forward?
It may. When they stopped doing those events on the West Coast, it definitely had an effect. And we still run events in our stores doing that. So we try to support it that way the best we can. But yeah, that's tough to say if that will depress the value on those or not. There aren't a lot of events for Legacy and Vintage, and I do wish there were more. And hopefully if we can get, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 stores open, we can create that through that mechanism. And there is a lot of interest and a lot of people in the community and in our stores and employees who are like, hey, we should really do these tournament scenes. And I would love to. It's just too much for us at this time.
Yeah.
And I guess we've always been like, yeah, we're going to try to open the best retail stores that we can, and then let CFB and Star City Games run the big events. And we will try to run the most events of anybody in stores. And they might not be, you know, these 500 player events, but we, you know, we'll get our 50 to 100 people out for our legacy and our modern and all these, and run them every week and have them available. So it's just a different perspective on it. We don't really chase the big dollar, the big super competitive events, although events in our stores can be fairly competitive and super interesting. But yeah, we're really pushing on the doing the regular thing. Long-term effects on legacy. I just hope that the stores can support that and people will keep playing it because they enjoy it and not because it's a high-level event. But if there's enough interest, I feel, and enough, you know, if there's some money to be made, and everybody will fill that void. So we will see.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, it's like Legacy is shrinking as far as events, but now we have Pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely want to get your thoughts on that, because that's a massive change with this new format. Obviously, would love to know here how that announcement and that format has now affected the cards that are legal in that, and the secondary market sales of that. But then also, you know, we've had this sort of chat that it seems like things are shifting as the generations, as Magic grows and ages, Modern is becoming sort of the new, it's like Legacy Light, and it's kind of becoming the new Legacy. And, you know, Legacy is kind of the vintage, and vintage is sort of its own just old school kind of format. And now we have Pioneer, which could evolve into sort of the new Modern. What do you think about that sort of perspective, and, you know, Pioneer in general, and how it's affected sales and whatnot?
Pioneer definitely boosted our sales when it was announced. It was an overnight thing. I don't know how much it was speculation and how many people build in decks, but it was that must have been you. Are you still there?
Yep.
Okay, great. It's been a, yeah, it was definitely a spike in our sales, and we've come down from it a little bit. And with our first, you know, bannings happening, I am interested how that goes. I hope that they don't ban aggressive. I know they said they will ban aggressively, but I hope it isn't an every week thing and people can build decks that last for a little while. So I'm super interested in it. I think it's a good idea. We've been talking about it actually in our stores and in our organization for a while. So that'd be interesting to form an extended standard or a smaller modern, just to have something that's a little bit more reactive, something in between standard and modern. I can see that if it takes off, you know, kind of that water balloon effect again, maybe taking some off of vintage as modern becomes more popular, and then this taking up some of the rest. I don't know, I'm kind of jumping around on this one.
So yeah, I guess you could see a cascade effect where Pioneer, well, I guess let's start with this. Do you anticipate Pioneer to kind of blow up and become a new modern? Or do you think the focus, like, modern is just going to continue to grow? Like, where does Pioneer fit? And then how could that affect the other formats?
I think Pioneer will stick. I think it's a good idea. I think it'll be a good format going forward. I think now with WotC's support, that type of format will do well. Before, there's always been, you know, people have tried to start formats similar to this and they haven't stuck around just because nobody's really sure that they'll get the support. Stores don't necessarily sign on, but from what I've seen, everybody's pretty excited about it and willing to support and willing to create the events and make it go. So I think it'll be good. Whether it'll be as big as modern, I don't know. That's the great thing about modern is it is kind of like, to your point, a mini legacy or a version of legacy, and it has access to more powerful cards. So if you want to have that type of experience, it makes sense to go there. And I think Pioneer is going to be more that in between. Like, I want a slightly more reactive but still powerful format. So I don't see it blowing up to be in another Modern, or Modern to grow and Pioneer to grow at that big as well. I think you're going to have to share between them.
Interesting. That's interesting. Okay. Well, I feel like from the vendor and secondary market perspective, it can't be anything but a good thing, because now these rotated standard cards that were just bulk or not doing anything now have an opportunity to kind of get some value out of them.
Absolutely. It's great for stores, great for people buying and selling cards, great for speculators, great for all of that. You take these stale cards and you give them a home and you give them a use, and you know, all of these standard decks of past are showing back up, and then you're going to start to see how those blend in new interesting ways with other standard decks that never quite made their way into Modern. So yeah, it's super interesting.
Cool. I kind of want to, if it's okay, I'd love to shift now to kind of Card Kingdom specific stuff. And, you know, maybe you can talk to us a little bit about what's been going on with the kingdom. And, you know, I don't know if we can talk about maybe a little bit of any tech focus, or what you think about technology and how you guys are implementing it, in the retail space. But obviously, you know, Card Kingdom just continues to blow up. I guess, are you guys now, you know, are you seeing the same growth that you had, you know, during that crazy 2017, 2018 period? Are you sort of just on track to keep moving in that same direction? Is the momentum still going?
The beginning of the year definitely was. It was a little bit shocking how much we grew again in the first part of the year, first half of the year. So that was very similar. And then the last, you know, few months, it's cooled off. We haven't really lost ground a whole lot, but we are more like we were. I think I alluded to this. We're still up over the year, but we're not as high as we were for a little while there, which was a little nuts, and I wouldn't expect us to be. So that was a boon. It was great for us, and we really, you know, had a great time, and we're kind of pushing, you know, in all ways just to get the cards in, get the cards out, and it's a fun thing to have. But then, you know, to your point about, you know, new tech or new features or new tools, all of those sort of, am I not there?
Oh, stand by, everyone.